welcome everybody to another episode of the Back to the Office podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris Phelps. My co-host and very good friend is Mr. Dave Horrocks.
Hi Chris, and hello to our listeners out there. Welcome to Back to the Office, the show where we journey back to Slough's premier paper merchant, Wernham Hogg, where life is stationary. Now Chris, this is the first time we've had the opportunity to record together since we launched the podcast, and I can't believe the reception we've had. It's been absolutely fantastic, hasn't it?
It has, to be fair, Dave, more than we expected. You know, we know that there's some great podcasts out there who have been really good to us as well in the office space, and it's been brilliant, Dave. We've got a lot of people who have moved over who come across us, had great feedback, we've had some cracking reviews as well. And honestly, I can't thank everybody enough. We know this is just purely me and Dave for a bit of fun, a passion project, and probably one of our favourite TV shows ever. So thank you, everybody. And thanks for listening to us, indulging us, because I know there's plenty of great podcasts out there. We've both listened to them, haven't we, Dave? Like the Wernham blog and that. And I think... Out of the Office as well. That was one, they were originally from a couple of years ago, who we came across and we both listened to. And they've had some great guests on there. They've got some great people listening. So it's so nice of them to sort of retweet and mention us and getting it. And we've also had people say, when are your episodes coming? Because we are releasing them every 2 weeks. So, you know, we don't want to do it and everything's out there. We just want to spread it. And then it gives us time to record and get everything together. And it also gives us time to thank everybody, Dave, because if we did record them six in a row and then release them, we've got nowhere to say like to people, have we? We'd have to jump on. So this makes perfect sense for us, especially with all the other podcasts we've got as well. So thank you guys, it's really, really appreciated.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And give those guys a follow as well if you're not following already. So, because I mean, in terms of the memes, those guys are world class. We don't really do that sort of thing, do we? But you know, those guys are on point. They'll always like pull something from what's going on in the news or whatever and apply it to the office. So really funny stuff.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So Dave, we are on episode 4, the training day. I cannot wait to go through this one.
Now, I've got to say, I think if you think of the great British comedies, you know, your Only Fools and Horses, your for me, it's Red Dwarf, you know, I absolutely loved Fawlty Towers. You've got these iconic episodes. And I think, you know, there's probably more than one of The Office. But if you're thinking of The Office, and certainly this first season, you're thinking about the whole David Brent with his guitar thing, aren't you? But before we get into the episode, Chris, I've got to ask you, have you got any stories for us that that parallel what's going on in this episode of The Office?
The only thing that parallels it, Dave, is there is a guitar story. Now, you know that I am not a great guitarist. That was why I was the singer in the band, because I was a toss-up of that or making the tea, Dave. So I can do a few chords here and there, but I'm not a great guitarist one bit. But when I left this company I was working for, one of the things we did as a joke was I brought a guitar in, an acoustic that I had. It looked like I was naked, Dave. I wasn't naked, but I had the boxers on, but the guitar placement was purely, and it was inspired by David Brent's guitar. I know at no point in this does he get his kit off or anything, but as I was leaving, everyone got a signed picture of me, Dave, holding this guitar. It's just stupid. I look back now, I'm like, fuck me, Chris, how cringeworthy could you be? But at the time, Dave, thinking that was a comedy genius, that's when I went with it. And I remember people going, what the fuck is this? And I was just like, just take it, it's fine, just take it. You know, like the joke had completely gone off on the first two or three people, Dave, but literally walked around everyone giving him. It's almost like selling a record, you know, like of David Brent later on when he buys his record and about three people have bought it. It's like that, giving it away. It was not the best. And it sounds even shitter as I'm talking about it, Dave, but I thought it worked at the time.
You've probably gone for the guitar. You probably only needed a ukulele.
Ukulele, fuck you, Dave.
You lay him up.
Can only be smaller than that, I think, Dave. But anyway, what about yourself?
So, I mean, the only thing I've got, and again, a bit like yourself, I don't have a real good, strong parallel to this, but I mentioned before about this little sports and social club that we used to have at the first office that I worked in. And one of the years I volunteered, so you volunteer for a whole year, so you have to be on this committee essentially and organizing events and all this kind of thing, and I happened to be volunteer for the year that my boss was doing it as well. And I just remember the very first meeting that I attended, and I hadn't worked directly with him on a project before, so, and actually in 5 years I don't think I really did that much at all, but basically I experienced such poor behavior in meetings. I was just, you know, again, you're sort of fresh out of university, so you're not really sure about meeting etiquette and how it all runs and stuff, but innately, I think all of us have a good idea of how an effective and efficient meeting should run. And he was doing, what I didn't know at the time was, he was basically going through the David Brent behaviours of basically talking over other people. So he'll not come forward and say something himself, you know, and stand out on a ledge. He'll wait for someone else to talk. And then do that thing that Brent does where he's kind of talking underneath someone else. So not completely overpowering and, you know, talking over, but just so much so that he's chipping in little things and, you know, giving his own opinion about what the other person's saying in real time. I just remember thinking, and just talking about mundane shit that has got absolutely nothing to do with what you're actually there in the meeting to discuss. And I just remember thinking, do you not have friends outside of work? Like, do you wait until you have a meeting like this to just discuss, like, things that are going on in your social life and everything? And so when I watched this episode, it took me back to that time. And, yeah, again, my old boss there.
I've got someone at work who does that, Dave. Yeah. It talks, yeah. You go in a meeting to talk about a subject and you come out like, you know, that thing years ago. Well, they did it with like the MCU and that, where they're like, how have we got to this point? You've got someone with a massive chart of diagrams and formulas, mathematical formulas, like, how the hell have we? And you end up talking about nonsense. And I'm just, yeah, like, there's a guy I work with, he's training with. And it was, I used to at school as well. So what we would do is, one of the teachers at school was a West Ham fan, and Mr. Colley was called, and he did history and the fucking lessons were shit. However, he was a massive sports fan, big West Ham fan, big sports fan, on a Tuesday. And it was always down to me, fucking the human gobshite. They all go, Chris, I don't want any homework. Can you get him talking about West Ham? And I would get him talking about West Ham. And I remember this one class, he spent the whole lesson talking about how, if it had been any other team but West Ham, so if it had been Man United, like we're talking 93, 94, United had won a couple of premierships then, it would have been the best. Tony Cotter had scored this goal with Julian Dix, obviously played for you guys. And he did a full thing on the board of how the goal, by the end of it, he went, oh God, the bell went, he went, oh God, right. Next week, we'll sort the homework out, and everyone's like thinking I'm a legend. And he used to this every week. And because he thought me and him were good pals, he'd do it to my brother as well. He'd go, does anybody want to watch the cricket? So I just put my hand up and go, oh, what? And my brother did it one class. It was brilliant. And I used to sit with him. And what he'd do is, if you didn't say yes, he made the rest of a class fucking work when you watched the fucking cricket with him in the corner. So our kid used to do it every lesson. And then you get the other lads going, can I watch the cricket? He goes, no. Phelps came over and he fucking said it. You can't jump on the bank. Get over there and get. And he, literally, you would be able to watch like the test and everything with him. And I'm not really a massive cricket fan anymore, but as a kid, I was like, this is brilliant. So any dodge is brilliant. And we do it. We used to always do it. This guy used to work at our place, actually. He's just left, training guy. And we get in a proper training day, Dave, health and safety training day. And we just start talking about his old businesses, and because he run businesses, he starts telling you about all these people he used to work with. All the whole day is ruined. And he's like, and at the end of it, we've done like, and then he's like, can we, I've not got this, we're gonna have to put this in again, lads. Yeah, no problem, mate. Honestly, Dave, it was religious. We would take him off the subject, and we're like grown men, you know, like I'm bloody 42, yeah. And it's like, these guys are older, and we would just drag this guy, and he'd get fucking bollocks all the time. Like, what have you done? And then take him off. It was hilarious, honestly. And that's why I think Rowan in this, the character Rowan, he's amazing. He is just, you know, and I know that we've all been on training days. I'm not just what I'm just talking about them, but there is days where people just take over and just, and it sounds like it's me who takes over at work, but I'm not. Literally, people take over and do what Brent does. And I think that's why this whole, I know it's exaggerated by 10, but this sort of stuff happens at every business, Dave. It's so funny.
Absolutely, because ultimately, you know, at the heart of every business, Chris, is people. You know, that is their chief commodity, apparently, according to the Brentmeister General. So, absolutely, you do get, and you can see, we'll get into it, but later in the episode, you know, people know that Brent is going to do that, and so they're kind of prodding him when they're asking about his band and stuff. But before that, Chris, let's get into the episode, because we start off, we have Dawn and Lee, we can see them kind of, they're on the stairs, they're having a bit of an argument, and then, you know, you can see there's something about changing minds, you know, both kind of accusing, well, I think Lee's accusing Dawn of changing her mind, and she's saying, well, that's fine, you know, and she did, but I love this bit, Chris, because Gareth offers his wisdom over. You know, it's going to be bad in the short term, isn't it, for Dawn and Lee? But the thing about long-term marriages, Chris, is inevitably the sex suffers. And you constantly have to find new and erotic ways to spice things up in the bedroom. And that's from Gareth's. Obviously, Gareth's wisdom, because he knows all about these long-term marriages, doesn't he?
Every time I look at this series, David, especially, he looks slightly different in the second one, because you can see Mackenzie Cook grew his hair out, but that fucking haircut is legendary. That is like a 1980s football hooligan haircut. It is so fucking brilliant that they've just done his hair. Like, you can tell he obviously had really long hair before it, but I just think his character is just fucking ace. And that thing about the sex and that is just nonsense. The thing with Gareth, though, Dave, like you say, he's probably a fucking virgin as well. And it's just the way they play it, like he's some proper marriage guidance person, is fucking brilliant. And Dawn, she's the one, Lee forces everything on Dawn, and the one time she's had enough, he's like, oh, you're always doing this, and I'm like, you bastard. You know, I said, he's my baddie. He is my baddie of this series, of the two series, Lee, to be honest. But yeah, this starts off so well, and it doesn't, for me, there's no drops in this episode at all.
No, and we don't give, you know, stars, you know, 5 out of 5 stars or whatever. We don't rate any of these, but I have to say, I think this one, of this rewatch, is definitely my favourite so far. It's brilliant. And one of the things I noticed, which I've never really noticed before, so when we have to talk about it, you know, I'm kind of actively watching it again, as opposed to, you know, it's kind of in the background, you know what's coming and that. But when Dawn's kind of putting out the chairs and stuff, you know, so she's had her argument with Lee and she's putting out the chairs in the training room, you can sort of hear David in the background just chewing the ear off Rowan. You know, about, yeah, it's like, I've done this before, you know, and I'm just gifted at it. I've never, ever noticed that before. But it was just right there in the background, and you know, because the camera's focused on Dawn, you kind of have to. I've just never noticed it before.
Yeah, because he says, doesn't he? He's giving the speech, isn't he, to the camera and Rowan, and he's like, yeah, it's good to have someone else on the screen and all on the camera. But he says to him, yeah, well, the thing is, you know, investment in people, it's all about the staff, and I'm this and I'm that. And then Dawn goes past crying, and he's just fucking looking at the camera and saying, oh, what's the fucking problem? Completely contradicting what he's saying. And that Rowan's just, and this is where the guy who plays Rowan is excellent, because he's just looking at him like, fuck me, this is going to be a long, long day today. It's so well put together.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Because, you know, Rowan's trying to talk, isn't he? He's trying to talk a little bit about what he's got set out for the training day and everything. But David is just constantly belittling him, isn't he? And he's like talking about, you know, we like to do this for the staff, to let them know that, you know, we care about them and what have you. And he calls Rowan a facilitator, doesn't he? Brit brought in the facilitator for the day, and Rowan's like, I've got an MBA in this from Bradford. It's like, and Davey's like, well, you know, I could have done this training myself. And Rowan goes to speak and he's like, again, the acting, Chris, of Ricky Gervais here is brilliant, because he's sort of saying, you know, it's my thing. he just does it in a very subtle way. I can't think how you can actually get the scripts for this, but to actually take from the script and have him, like, he's sort of making it up on the spot, you know, being able to deliver it like that is just, it's fucking brilliant, Chris. Really, really impressive.
Yeah, and you know what, Dave? I'm glad you said that, because it's something I was going to talk about a bit later, but I think it needs addressing. It is Ricky Gervais, and I don't know whether it's, obviously we don't know how it's made, what the direction is. We know we've got Stephen Merchant there as well in the background, but his use of his body, he does so many things that you will see these sort of larger than life managers, supervisors, someone who's got a little bit of power. We've all come across him, good or bad. And in life, it's the way he does things. And I agree, Dave, that they're looking at the camera, and we all do it. Someone has a pop at you at work or whatever, or someone says something and everyone's in the office together and you're like, yeah, 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 yeah. And then they go out and someone goes, what a prick. Or, you know, something like that. But at the time, you're all like fucking two-faced. You're all going, yeah, oh really? Oh, right, oh. Right, okay. No, thanks for that. Yeah, yeah. Email me. Yeah. And as soon as he goes, you know it, Dave, man or woman, we've all done it. And I, like I say, I only work in an office for half a day, but we've all fucking done it. And everyone's like, what a prick. You know, like, fuck off or whatever. So we all do it. We all do it. So I think what Ricky Gervais gets right is that. And there's a line he says in this whole thing with Dawn, which I've never, ever picked up on. And it doesn't hit home, like, you know, like he says, I know he says it in a minute, but you know, good idea forever. But the actual, it's a line about, if your floor's dirty and you need it cleaning, you come to see me or something like that. I'm like, I've never picked up on that, Dave, but it's a stupid David Brent line.
We'll clean it. We'll clean our floor together.
Together, yeah. And you're like, and it's not a line that I would ever remembered in all the time. I remember all the beats of the most famous ones, but it's just a stupid line that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Sorry, I was just going to say the like you say about the body language, the looks to the camera. When Dawn, you know, she's been putting out the chairs, you know, and but she's in the background now. And he's talking about, you know, how the staff are the greatest commodity. And she loses it, you know, it spills over and she bursts out crying and then just runs out. And despite the fact that Brent has been talking about how much he values the people, and you can see Rowan, he is genuinely concerned. He's like, oh, shit, I hope she's okay. Brent looks at the camera and just pulls a face like, something going on there, you know. Just the hypocrisy of it is just so brilliant, and no script that you write would ever deliver that actual perfect comedy timing.
No, it wouldn't. I tell you what I've picked up on this time, I know you totally agree, David. I tell you what I've picked up on this time. Do you think, and I'd love to try and research this, and apologies if some of the other podcasts have covered this, but I don't necessarily think this series is in the right order, you know, because, you know, like the redundancy stuff, I know it's pretty much at the start, but the way they've edited it, I can't work out, because this training day is just one of them throwaway episodes, isn't it? They're all under redundancy, but they're going on training. You know, I know it sounds really daft because it's about the show, but I don't know. I can't work out with some of them where were the different stages of the series and they've just put them in. I don't know. I don't know if you've picked up on that.
No, I think this is where it should be. I absolutely do, because, I mean, in the next episode, you know, slight spoilers, but that's when he's interviewing for his secretary, isn't it? You know,
and, yes.
But he's making other people redundant.
Yeah.
Again, it's just another, it's about Brent being a shit fucking manager, because he's having to, you know, free up some capital by getting rid of people on redundancy. Yeah, he can't be asked to do his own filing, so he needs to hire someone else. I think this is absolutely where it should be, because, you know, the bit with Tim getting a bit fucked off near the end. And, you know, he's had enough. He's going to hand his notice in. That, for me, grounds it in this spot in the series. It's not completely a throwaway. You know, you could plonk this anywhere in the series and it would be okay. I think that bit at the end with Tim sort of means this is where it's supposed to be.
You know what? And I'm going to take that back. Fucking, you know, Mr. 180 U-turn here, because you're right. Because thinking about what comes after this, because I'm not watching it until we record. So you're right. I've not got that stage, and it doesn't matter anyway. I'm just thinking in my head as we were talking, but no, you're right. So anyway, Dave, I'll forget that. Forget that comment, Dave. Okay. I've done a Brent. Forget it. But what I love is, like, this next scene sets the stage for the training. So you've got Tim and Dawn. He's, you know, comforting her. You can see Tim absolutely loves her. Gareth comes over, doesn't he? Fucking knobhead as usual. Right, just talking shit to her.
I love this bit. Oh, it's brilliant. Sorry, go on.
So there's that bit first. So I know which bit you're talking about in a minute, but so he's that bit first where he's comforting her and he's like, you know, are you all right or not? But when we get Keith, Dave, and that fucking voicemail from hell, and whoever was ringing him up that day must have gone, oh fuck this. Listen to that message, goes on for about a minute.
It's just brilliant though, and I couldn't actually, I'm not sure I could articulate to you, Chris, why exactly this is so funny, other than it is so on point for that mundaneness of office life. You know, it just sucks the life out of you, doesn't it? You know, we find out a bit more about Keith in the episode, but it's the way he delivers it. Like, he is just almost about to fall asleep himself. Never mind anyone who actually gets through to his voicemail on that day. But it's just like, hello, you're through to Keith. I will be at training all today. Please call me or leave a message. Call you tomorrow.
That was quicker than in those days.
I know, yeah. I was hurrying it by because, you know, you kind of have to. But for him to do it slower and deliver it in that perfect way where you just know he's bored as fuck, he just does not care about anything really, it's perfect. But, you know, again, Chris, after that brief cutaway, you get back to Tim and he's trying to be comforting, basically saying, you know, it's fine, you know, you and Lee will be together, and, you know, if not, you know, I'll be here. He's saying it in a jokey way, but joking, not joking kind of thing. And then Gareth comes across, doesn't he? And it's just, I love this bit.
don't worry, Dawn, Monkey Allen fancy. Where else if no one else knows? And then Tim's like, who the fuck's Monkey Allen? I can just tell you, he's a little guy, and he's just like,
I don't know if you notice it though, Chris, because and hats off again to Lucy Davis. I said in the first episode on this rewatch, I'd noticed more how brilliant her performance is. Because, you know, you've probably heard Ricky Gervais talk, you know, when they were thinking about the writing, they were thinking about, you know, the men were boys and the women were adults. You know, that's kind of the mindset that he had. And so she, you know, bursts out crying and just goes off. Because she's had this massive argument. She's a bit upset. But after Gareth says that about Monkey Allen fancying her, even if no one else does, she bursts out crying, goes away, and he just goes, can't say anything.
It's fucking ridiculous.
I think I'm appreciating Mackenzie Crook as well a lot more on this rewatch, just how brilliant his performance is as well.
Yeah, because we did. I'd never seen him in anything but this, Dave. I'm with you. You know, obviously, you've all got to start somewhere. And I'm sure he was in stuff like The Fucking Bill or Casualty or something, you know, like some serious stuff just to get you, or even EastEnders as some fog or whatever. They always pop up in different things, don't they? But this is for me. I'd never seen. I remember him in Pirates of the Caribbean afterwards. He was in that, you know, he's literally in all of them. But again, I said it myself. He's brilliant. Him and Tim, it's a shame that Ricky Gervais didn't use them, but obviously their popularity soared after this. So it would have been different. I saw an interview with Martin Freeman saying, I think, I don't know if you sent it me or I'd watched it, about saying like he would have gone back, but he just didn't feel like Ricky and that had anything to bring him back for. But you said, I would have done it if I'd had the opportunity.
Yeah, and I think with the movie as well, that was more just Ricky Gervais and taking David Brent's character forward, wasn't it? You know, I think like Stephen Merchant was asked about it and he said, you know, this is not an Office film. This is a David Brent film. So I don't know if there was, you know, some kind of needle there at all. But, you know, I think that's pretty much why it focuses in on Brent, because the writing and everything else was all about him and none of the other characters came back. But I think we've got a long road before then. We've got the second series and the Christmas specials as well. Those are the true Office episodes, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, to be fair. But Dave, we get into the training. Everyone's in the room and Rowan's there. And like you said about David talking under him, no matter what he says, David is there. He stood next to him on his shoulder. He can't let the power battle slip, can he? He can't just become one of the trainees. He has to be there as like the equal of Rowan, because Rowan's got more knowledge on something. Like we had with Ricky with the, you know, blockbusters and everything. Yeah. It's the same thing again. And this is fantastic. Ricky Gervais just gets it so perfect what it's like to go on a training day at work, because, you know, Dave, and I know, fucking boring as hell. I've been on so many and you have as well. And they're just monotonous, absolute monotony. And you sat there watching these shit video. And what Rowan says about this video, which is Peter Purvis, is exactly what I've heard so many times from trainers.
Really?
Oh, the video's a little bit dated, but you know, you'll get the understanding, or ignore the thing. There might be some inappropriate jokes in here, but it'll be fine. And I've heard all that, Dave. I swear to God, I've heard that even recently. And you sat there watching some shit movie from like some documentary from the 80s or something for your training, and you're like, what the hell is this? And people lie. I love the casting of Peter Purvis, Dave, because it's always used to be. Do you remember Bob Greaves off Granada Reports or whatever he was called? He'd always pop up on these training videos because that's where he used to make money on the side, but absolutely brilliant.
Well, he was like Doctor Who, wasn't he? He's Blue Peter. You know, showed up on, was it Grandstand? Bob Greaves, are you on about, you're not on about Jimmy Greaves, are you?
No, it's Bob Greaves off Granada Reports. What's his name? Glasses bald. And I remember seeing a training video with him in at work, and probably from like the early 2000s. And he's just like, oh my God.
But this is where we get the iconic line, isn't it, Chris? You know, when Rowan said about it being a bit cheesy and a bit 80s, you know, David, he's constantly searching. He's got this library of little phrases, these little business phrases that he's heard, but then he uses them out of context, you know. So he's trying to riff on what Rowan's saying. And he's like, a good idea is a good idea forever.
It's one of the best lines ever.
But then he's doing that thing as well where he's pointing to himself, pointing to the room back and forth, and it's just brilliant.
It is. It's sensational. And I think as well, is because of the way he's trying to talk about different things, what the training's going to be about, and we don't even get any of that dialogue. It's literally Rowan abandons everything. I can relate so much, Dave. Like honestly, the stuff about the training and I'm saying about taking the trainer off what he should be doing, and we're all there winding each other up like, go on, see if you can get him to, and you take him off. And I've seen emails at previous jobs where it's like, you've had emails going, when you go training, do not ask the trainer about his personal life, about his hobbies, because they're paying him. They've got to pay him for another day or another half day to get the training done, because we've just been dicking around. So when you're doing this is just a proper training day for me. It's absolutely just beat for beat. But again, Dave, the fucking role-playing bit, oh my God, is that amazing? It is
but,
so
but
good.
Before we get onto the role-playing bit, you've got the whole, when they're playing through the video, And I'd have to say, what you were just saying there about distracting the trainer, I would think in real life, I would say that's down to the trainer. If you've got a good trainer, he can see that happening. He's got a bunch of stuff that he needs to get through. And, you know, he wants to impart this knowledge that he's got, you know, onto other people. So it would be in the trainer's hands. But here, I can't help but just feel sorry for Rowan. That he's just got... I can't see what he could have done differently that, you know, that wouldn't be... That wouldn't mean the whole day was just completely sabotaged by David Brent, because they're playing through the video and you got old Peter Purvis there. He's like, what's the single most important thing to your business? And straight away, David, he can't even fucking shut up while the video's playing. He's like, staff. And then Peter's like, that's right, the customer. And David sort of tilts his head. Coming at it from a different angle. You know, he won't accept that he was just wrong. He was just, oh, yeah, so it's a different way of looking at it. And then we get into the whole thing where, you know, he talks about this is what's happening to your profits, you know, and he's burning a bunch of 20 quid notes. And Brent's like, that's not real money, because it is illegal to destroy or burn anything with the Queen's image of the realm. It's like, what the fuck has that got to do with customer care?
David, that's what I'm talking about, sabotaging a training day. That is the discussions you get. And honestly, I've seen the emails. Do not distract the trainer. And you're right, any trainer worth his salt would shut everyone up and go, just shut up now. This is all, kind of, I wouldn't say it so direct, but they'd be like, look, I'm not here for that. We're getting sidetracked now, way late. Can we? And I've seen that before, but I've seen some bad trainers there, and this is perfect. And it's Gareth asks about the stamp, and then they go about the legal tender. Yeah.
And again, it's the way you've got Gareth in the background. Again, I'd never paid attention to him before, but the camera's sort of lingering on David in the foreground and Gareth in the background. And you can see the cogwheels turning in his head. He's like thinking about what David said about burning anything with the Queen's image. You know, he's asking him about, well, could you set fire to a stamp? And then David's like, no, postage stamp is legal tender and a bus driver would have to accept it. And then, you know, you got a bit of a back and forth with Tim as well, but, you know, and he's saying, oh, I'll complain about it when I'm walking home. You know? So just this back and forth. Again, I'm trying... Because I've been in this place where I've thought a lot of it is ad-libbed, because it looks ad-libbed, it looks quite natural. I'm thinking, if you've got the script, and just say Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant just wrote the script, that was it, and then they just handed it over to another director, you wouldn't get this kind of natural conversation, this back and forth, I don't think.
No.
It's just so perfect, and the interaction and just the whole distraction from the training is exactly what you said. It's just perfect.
It is, and I know, like you say, I jumped before, but we've got to talk about the role playing, because you said this a couple episodes ago about how they get everything in a half hour episode is amazing. Yeah. But this role playing bit, and there's two bits in this whole episode that get me every time. It's when Sir Rowan, right, your leader, David Brent, come on. You know, oh, I've done this before. Yeah, you know, I've done it before. No problem. All right, okay. And he's telling him what
it's cheating, really, because I've done it before.
Yeah. David's like, he's telling people how faulty.
Yeah, right? He gets a sniff like, I'll be the hotel manager. Oh, well, you know, maybe I should... I should be the hotel manager, you know, Basil Fawlty, because of the comedy.
This bit, right, for shock factor, even now, is unbelievable. And it's the way it's like, right, I'm going to be the hotel manager, right? Can we complain? It's like, let's make a point. Don't care. Well, I think you will want to tell you what the complaint is. He's like, don't care. Arms folded.
And he You're an ambassador for the company.
Yeah, the company. And he just goes, there's been a rape.
There's been a rape up there.
The whole room. Just, and he turns to everyone and he goes, got his attention. Get their attention. And he can see everyone just like, what the... And honestly, that bit, still gets me. I was fucking crying, Dave. I just love this bit. It's so David Brent, it is hilarious.
Have you seen any of the Ricky Gervais stand-up at all?
No, I've never really watched it, no. Oh,
it's good. It's on Netflix at the minute. It's well worth a watch. But he's talking about kind of going back and forth with the with internet trolls and stuff on Twitter. And, you know, he's just fucking... He's so Ricky Gervais about it. He's so wrong. But he was saying about this woman who tweeted him saying, you know, do you think that rape jokes are funny? And he said, I know I shouldn't have done it, but I responded, depends on the joke. But then he references, he talks about this scene, about the fact, you know, I think there's been a rape up there. And it's well worth a watch that, Chris. But I think this goes down to the shock moment of the episode, doesn't it? Because everyone's just like, what the fuck? Not only have you brought something utterly inappropriate into the conversation, what the fuck has it got to do with customer care? You know, and he's trying to retrofit some kind of wisdom on people, you know, to show everyone how clever and, you know, knowledgeable he is. So get their attention, you know. And then he's like, I think I phased you, you know. Let's try it the other way around. Let's see if you can phase me.
Oh, you know what, Dave? This, for me, this little bit now, I know the rape thing, I said I was crying. I was pissing myself. This bit and the way this ends, this little section about David being the hotel manager, for me, is absolute comedy fucking gold. It's genius because it's like, I won't make a complaint. Don't care. And he's just, and when he gets to the end and he goes, what room are you in? 362? He goes, there is no 362 because some complaints will be false. And I'm fucking crying at this point. And the whole room, and Rowan's just like, what the fuck is going on? That, Dave, that is brilliant writing, and the comedic timing is exceptional. That for me is the line of the whole show. I love it.
But I think the actor who plays Rowan here is bloody brilliant, you know, because you can see in these early, like, let's say the first 10 minutes or so of the episode, you can see he keeps getting derailed by David Brent. He keeps trying to get it back on track as best he can, but you can see he's just baffled at this stage. He's like, I can't believe what this guy's doing here. You know, he's just baffled. And it's only later on where he starts to get really agitated and losing his rag with him. But that journey through the episode for Rowan, I think, is pretty funny.
Yeah, it is. It's fucking excellent. Excellent. And again, Dave, you know, things just keep tripping every scene. The next scene's about the ultimate fantasies. And, you know, Rowan says, like, you know, obviously Lee comes and interrupts and says, Dawn, can I have a word? And she leaves. And you can see Gareth isn't there at this point. And we don't know where he is because you're like, oh, where's Gareth? He's not sat next to David. And it's about ultimate fantasies. And Rowan's like, I want to live on an island. And David straight away, well, mine's, you know, if time travel was actually impossible. It was actually impossible. Everlasting light. And this is where Tim just goes, doesn't he? And he's like, I think I'm starting to know what it feels like. Because he's like, yeah. Hey, this is, Tim's been fine at this point, and he's been that underlying. And you're right, actually, Dave, calling myself out what I said earlier. But Tim has always had this thing where he feels he's better than this. There's something on the horizon. All his dialogue has led to this. So I think you're correct. I was completely wrong earlier. But it's the way that it then pans to Dawn and fucking Lee, the tight ass, Dave. You know, they've been together 3 years. I have got a story about this, right? And it's not very often I get done, right? And I got done on this. Was me and Sam get together. Got together in 98, so it was about 99, maybe 2000. We just got married. I think it was the first or second Valentine that we were together. And Evening News used to run a thing where, not the Evening News, sorry, The Daily Mirror used to run on Valentine's Day. I don't know if it does it now, but it'd be a page of people to, you know, their Valentines and stuff, Dave. And I read one that was from a Sam to Chris, and it read like Sam had done it, and I think we only had one mobile at this point, so I waited for rang her at work, couldn't thank her enough, Dave, and I kept the snippet and I laminated it and everything. A couple of years later, she said, yeah, it wasn't me.
Fair so play I got for coming done. Clean there. Yeah, she could have got away with that one, Scott.
Yeah,
well,
not straight away, Dave. I felt a right tight arse. She got fucking a top fucking Valentine's present and everything because of that. Because I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to go. She's put it in the paper. And I'm telling everyone, have you seen this? Like a knobhead. And it wasn't even fucking, it was probably, I don't even know how I come across it and truly believe they're so gullible. But yeah, so seeing this Lee Love Dawn marriage, tight ass.
But you can tell, as well as, you know, Tim not being satisfied with his life, you know, he's sort of a bit stuck. He's just turned 30 and he's wondering what the hell is he doing here, essentially. You can sort of see on a different level, Dawn is in the same mental space as well. You know, she's kind of going out with Lee, but you can see she's obviously not that happy with him. Seems to be arguing quite a lot. And, you know, she takes the piss out of him, really, doesn't she? You know, because I can imagine if this was in real life, Chris, and playing on your note of, well, yeah, Lee is the baddie in this, in a lot of this, more so than you probably first realise. You can imagine, you know, he'd get the ump if he saw that at home. You know, can you imagine they're both watching this documentary, you know, if it's in real life, and he'd go off on one, wouldn't he? Because she's just called him thrifty. You know, he'd be worried about what Taffy's saying down in the warehouse.
But Dave, again, why is Gareth not in the room? And it gets answered so well. Gareth comes in with a whiteboard, doesn't he? Puts it down and then he's like, Gareth, what's your ultimate fantasy? And David tees him up with no context. Straight away, yeah, in front of a fucking room full of people. Two lesbians, sisters. I just like to watch. He's just like, fuck me. And then Tim goes, you know, for once, what Gareth's got to say.
It's the fact that Gareth, you know, just answers straight away. You know, he doesn't have to think about it at all. Just answers straight away like he's been pondering this for a good while. It is absolutely, again, that's another classic moment out of this episode, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant.
It is, and this is where the whole training takes a nosedive completely. So Rowan has a word with Keith, don't he, Dave? You know, Mr. Monotone. He's like, what, you know, what do you want to do? And he's just, David, he's just trying to speak over him, but Rowan's basically seeing his ass. He's like, David, let him speak. Let him, you know, he's proper seeing his ass. And Keith's like, yeah, this job's just a stopgap. And you can see David just like, oh, what? You know, like, I'm really taking the video. You know, and he goes, I don't take work home with me. It's pretty brainless. And then he's the old classic.
Yeah, maybe at your level.
Yeah, your level of what of being a band. And at that point, David just goes, yeah, been there, done that, got the T-shirt, next. And that's where Tim does what we do, or we used to do at work, and completely derails, him and Dawn just derail the whole training because they're not asking David about the band. And fucking Rowan sat there with his arms folded, just like, oh, fucking hell, what am I doing with my life? And the whole thing with David and this is sensational, Dave.
Yeah, and I didn't realise how much they'd taken, because I'd not gone back, before I watched Life on the Road, I'd not gone back to watch the original series, sort of tear me up for that movie. But that's what the band is in the movie, isn't it? It's foregone conclusion. It's not the original band, because they're all, you know, they've got lives now. They're all new session musicians who David's paying for out of his redundancy. But yeah, the name Foregone Conclusion comes from here. And when they're asking him, you know, what was your role? And he's like, oh, singer-songwriter. And that's where, Chris, you get the interlocking fingers bit, you know, that you see the gif replayed over and over again. I just fucking love it, because the way he does it as well, when he interlocks his fingers there, you know, talking about being a singer-songwriter and gelling with the band and whatever, it's the way he puts his teeth over his bottom lip at the same time as he interlocks his fingers. Oh, it's just brilliant. Obviously, it doesn't sound funny when I'm describing what's happening. But it all happens in that split second. And it's just brilliant. But he's going on about, you know, he gets the question, were you successful? And he's saying, oh, I'll let you be the judge of that when I tell you he supported a little-known Scottish band called Texas. And, of course, then we get the talking heads, don't we? He's sort of talking about, you know, supporting Texas and whatever. And he's saying, don't slag them off. They're very good at what they do. I mean, they couldn't run a successful paper merchant, and I couldn't do. Oh, actually, I could do, and I think they knew that even then, and I think that's what spurred them on, really.
Oh, you know, and you're right, that whole dialogue, and the thing is, Ricky Gervais was in a band. He's an accomplished musician, right? No matter, he plays it all for laughs. It's almost like Les Dawson levels. You know, Les Dawson used to play the piano, and he was a absolutely classically trained pianist. But to play it badly for his skits and his sketches, it's difficult to try and play the song, but then to purposely play it out of time, and you know, and all that. When you learn to play an instrument, you will knock notes or play the guitar. You'll knock a string you shouldn't do, and all that. We get that, but to do it, David is, you know, Ricky Gervais is a brilliant guitarist. The finger picking he's doing on the guitar, David, you're a far miles better guitarist than I ever dreamed to be. You can clearly see that he is a great guitarist. And the fact that he's, what knits this all together is when they're all having a coffee and he's there playing and Tim just comes over and goes, he went home to get it. That was like, again, comedy timing. And then the camera pans to him and he's doing that fucking spaceman, Dave. And he stops everything, doesn't he, about, now you're colourblind. And he goes, Rachel. She's a serpent in the garden gates of hell.
I think the brilliant thing for me, so I mentioned Red Dwarf before. And, you know, I don't know if you've watched that, but Craig Charles' character, Lister, one of the jokes in this kind of sci-fi sitcom is that he's just terrible at playing guitar. And then he'll play it, and it is the absolute worst thing. It's like someone's trying to make it sound as bad as possible. But to his ears, it sounds really good. So that, it's completely unbelievable. You can't believe that someone is listening to that and thinking, oh yeah, it sounds really good, that sounds like Jimmy Page or something. The thing with Brent is he is pretty good, but he just gets it slightly wrong, doesn't he? You know, and it's not necessarily the music, it's all in the lyrics and the themes that he's singing about that are just you know, all slightly wrong. And he's taken, you know, some kind of concept with this spaceman. What does he sing? So yellow, brown, black or white or something like that.
Yeah, it's like, you're now colorblind.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I don't think you should be calling yellow out as a color there.
No, I don't. And sorry, Dave. Go on.
No, you go.
And what I was going to say is, Dave, we get the next song is played on adverts now. It's on an insurance advert on the TV. And he plays Free Love Highway. And that is on an advert now. You know, it's obviously not Ricky Gervais singing it, but that song is ridiculous. But Ricky Gervais got asked loads. I saw him play it on, it's called Sam and Jim on, what's it called? In America from about 2014. They love The Office UK. Jim Norton's a massive comedian over there. And it's Sam and him do this radio show on what Howard Stern owns, the channel. I can't remember his bloody name call now. But he's on it and he plays it on the guitar, Dave, to this crowd of Americans because they love The Office. And he said, I didn't even know he was coming in to play. And he gets accused and plays it. But Free Love on the Free Love Highway is amazing. It's just stupid.
But it's a cracking song. It is definitely, definitely catchy. But the funny thing about it, you know what I was saying about Brent, he just gets it a bit wrong. He is an accomplished musician, for sure. But, you know, he's talking about heading down Route 66 or whatever it is, you know, and picking up all these women and shagging them all and stuff like that. And it's like, you're a fucking manager of a paper merchant company in Slough. You have never done anything like this at all. And for me, that's what Well, that's what the comedy of the song is. Did you see he recorded it with Noel Gallagher as well?
Yes.
With Noel Gallagher doing the backing vocals, you know, the Gareth backing vocals and everything. But again, it's really, really good song. But the first bit that cracks me up, Chris, is where, you know, he's sort of singing away there and Gareth's in the background. It's like, she's dead. She's not dead. You know, he looks at Gareth with this look of disdain on his face, like, you know, and... Oh, Gareth is totally immersed, you know, in the reflected glory of David Brent, isn't he, in this moment? It's just brilliant.
It is. And at the end of the song, because it does go on for a good 30-odd seconds, Rowan goes, he might slaps his hands and goes, right, lunch, and gets up. So the next bit, and I've never noticed it before, and you were saying, and you've been right about Lucy Davis, I've never noticed this before, but the scene in the office where you've got Gareth and David talking to Dawn about, you know, having a few issues and stuff. And I've never seen it before because I always remember being off camera and the next minute David's got the guitar. But if you look, and you've probably picked up, it's her eyes.
Yeah.
She's sat there normal and all of a sudden her eyes go like fucking saucers, you know, flying saucers. And she goes... And then he just starts fucking playing that song, doesn't it? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I love Gareth on his shoulder like he's some top backing singer or something. Yeah. Dave. It's so good.
It's good. I did notice that bit with the eyes. And again, it's saying something without words, isn't it? It
brilliant.
It's like, holy shit, am I really here right now? You know, he's got it out there. And Brent's trying to make out that he's wrote this song just for Dawn. Like just literally now as all this stuff's been happening with her and Lee. And, you know, he goes into a song that is clearly about Princess Diana. Just everything. You know, a rose, you never use your thorns. And then this is the bit where he's like rushing through the Paris night.
She says to him, this is about Princess Diana. Yeah. And it's Gareth. Gareth's like, he fits dogs. It's you know, not the car crash bit. But then Gareth's like, yeah, because your relationship is like, who the fuck is he to say that?
But when he says that, again, just the brilliance. Brent, like, points behind, because Gareth sat behind him, isn't he? And he points with his thumb and he gives that knowing nod with his eyes closed for a second, you know, like, yeah, he's got it. You know, it's brilliant. And then she thinks he's got him again. And he says, well, Paris, city of love, isn't it? And again, Brent's like, knowingly. And then at that point, I think Dawn concedes, doesn't she? She's just like, yeah, it fits perfectly. Thank you. You know, she's just like, please get me out of here. Oh, it is just so good. But when he gets that acknowledgement, he starts going into Every Breath You Take, doesn't he?
Yeah, but he'd already said he only plays songs that he's written. And
I know,
he did
say that, didn't he? I hadn't joined those two things up, but you're absolutely right. He's done us there, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has, to be fair. But again... We get the next scene and, you know, Dawn's there with Tim and that, and she says she wants to leave. And Gareth, you know, you've got a job here for life. I want to do something. Well, think about it. You could be answering the phone in the regional offices or paper merchant, Dave. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and you can see, you know, Tim is obviously, it shocks him, doesn't it? You know, it sort of springs him into life. He's like... You can't leave. You are the only thing that makes being in this office bearable. And so you can see he's really kind of rocked by that. And you see him a little bit later, you know, when he's staring out the window and stuff. But yeah, Gareth with his fucking... Look at George Lamp. Oh, no, it was Jeff Lamp, I think it was. He's 42 and has his own Porsche. That was from paper. that's the limit of Gareth's ambition.
Oh, it's so good, Dave.
Yeah, it is brilliant, isn't it? And you can see then we get Gareth talking to David. You know, he's clearly, again, he wants some of that reflected glory. He thinks David Brent is the most talented guy he knows, and he's trying to angle for a manager's position. He's like, well, Brent's like, well, I'll probably manage myself, and could I be your assistant? And then it's the old assistant to the manager. But again, the bits that I've not picked up on before. So, you know, Rowan comes in, he interrupts, and he's like, look, we've got a lot to get through. No one's here, you know. And so David Brent sends Gareth away, you know, go and rally the troops, and we need to get on with it. And then, you know, Brent, he's still in this kind of self-indulgent, I'm a rock star kind of phase, isn't he? And he's got a picture behind him. I can only assume it's Wernham or Hogg. You know, it's going to be one of the founders of the company. And he's just like, imagine him being in a band, bald old git. But then he realises he's talking to Rowan, who is bald, and he's like, oh, yeah, with the glasses.
He's that
so what's the vibe in the second half?
Excellent, Dave. Fucking excellent. And I think as well, this thing about the chicken, they do this forward, this exercise, don't this team building, and it's just like they're doing... There's a fox, a chicken, and some grain, and they've got to get across. But they've only got, you know, you only have one person on the boat. Now, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a way. This is really ridiculous, but there was a way of getting there without the chicken going backwards and forwards. Dave, I don't know if you picked up on that.
All right, go on.
So you've got the boat. You can only have one item on the boat, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
Each time, so you've got the chicken, the fox, and the grain. So why don't you take the fox over, come back for the grain, take that over, and then
because when you're taking the fox, the chicken's already eating the grain, Gareth.
And that's exactly what I meant, Dave.
As Gareth says, hello, my favourite food.
Fuck off, Dave. I can't believe I've just done that. And I was being serious as well. Anyway, carry on, Dave. What a knobhead, right?
I do think that, I don't know, there might be another way to solve that puzzle, but I don't think there is.
I don't even know why I care, Dave, but you're right. I'm just trimming myself like a right dick. But anyway, go on.
And you can't leave the fox with the chicken because, oh, no, bloodbath.
Yeah, so good.
But what I think this does, again, brilliantly, you can see that the work that Tim is doing, it is a little bit beneath him. But you've got Gareth, who's a bit more simple, you know, and he's struggling with it a little bit. And you can just see Tim is getting more and more annoyed with it all. So, you know, and the fact that Gareth is just constantly winding him up, and you're getting the pan around to the other people who are talking it through with whoever they've been paired up with. But then when Rowan gives the answer, and you can see, you know, Brent kind of wants to take the lead on it as well, but I'm sure he'll make a bit of an arse of himself, like say taking the fox over first.
Sure.
But he explains it all. Oh, and then no. I just love the bit where Gareth's like, some questions.
Yeah.
He flips his pad of paper. Just a fucking brilliant by Mackenzie Crook there.
Yeah, it is. It's excellent. And I think as well, when he's shown in the slides of the two dogs and Tim's like, fucking, you know, it's better to work together than, you know, different directions. And that's, we've seen them pictures before, but Gareth's just not getting it. And then David goes into that fucking metaphor, which Rowan just loses it completely, doesn't he? He just absolutely. But sorry, just before that, we get a comment, which fucking hell is, I mean, even then you get away with it, but they're talking about the farmer and he said he should have a wife to help him. And Tim goes, he's gay. And Gareth went, well, he shouldn't be allowed near animals. And you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's when Tim says he's not got a wife, he's gay. And Gareth's like, well, you shouldn't be allowed near animals then. I was like, oh, fucking hell. And, you know, there's a couple of things. I think there's not much that dates these episodes, I don't think. As we've been going through them, it's still The Office now. All right, the technology is a bit different, you know, like with the computers and everything. But I think the thing with Dawn, I picked up on as well, you know, so putting a message in the paper, I don't know, does anyone do that anymore? I think some old people might, but I don't tend to think people do that anymore. And some of the like gay jokes and stuff. Even when Brent is, you know, singing about, you know, why the tears, he said, because none of them was you. And Tim's like, what, you? And he's like, oh, no, he's got a picture of his girlfriend. Oh, it sounds a bit gay. It's not gay. You know, and he goes back into the song. I don't think, if you film that now, I don't think you'd do that joke, to be fair.
No, I don't. I don't at all. I don't think you'd see that anywhere near as much as even, you know, this episode is dynamite, but that one stands out a lot, Dave, doesn't it? It really does stand out a lot. Even Ricky Gervais, he wouldn't do that sort of joke now. Yeah. I don't think he's written that.
I don't know. There's not much off the table when it comes to Ricky Gervais. You've got to watch his stand-up. It is really funny. But I agree with what you're saying about Rowan. It's what we talked about before, isn't it? At this point, when Brent is talking about the fable where the dog looks at its reflection and thinks that the other dog in the reflection has got a bigger bone, so he opens his mouth to grab the bone and he's dropped it. And Rowan's like, and what's that got to do with this? He's probably, I just love the way he's like, Brent, he sort of looks a little bit at the camera and he's like, oh, don't you know? and then Gareth's got his pen. He's like, bones. as if it's got some relevance, you know, to this thing about pulling together as a team, you know, this whole message that Rowan's trying to give. Just fantastic. But it's at that point, isn't it, where Tim, you could see he's been bubbling up since he found out Dawn's going to leave. The mundaneness, the trivialness of this whole training day, he's just had enough. Basically says, right, had enough, you know, says to Gareth, you're a twat. And he's like, I'll have my notice in and everything, walks off. And Brent, you know, he's like, it'll be fine. Again, showing how people-centric he is. But it's this bit, isn't it, Chris, where he comes back in and he says to Dawn, I know it's not funny. This is the buttock-clenchingly embarrassing moment of the episode for me. Because he's like, you know, now that you've split up with Lee, you know, would you like to come for a drink with me? And he just says, we've not split up, you know, in front of everyone. And then he does a bit of a Brent, doesn't he? He has to pivot very, very quickly. And he's like, no, I mean as a friend.
Yeah, and I love Martin Freeman's delivery as he's going, because he's so embarrassed, but he's very clever with his hand. He puts his left hand up on the back of his hair, you know, like just to say, what the fuck have I just done now, you know? And that, Dave, again, is where we get another, because obviously, you know, Rowan's gone anyway just before that, but we get the bit where David looks at the whole thing and goes, Gareth, go and get the guitar. And it is the hands to him as the credits come. It's fucking brilliant. It's this episode for me, and they've been brilliant, all four of them, but I think just for so many things, Phil, it's absolutely the best one so far for me.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, that bit, like I said, it reminds me, have you seen that clip? You must have seen it on Sky Sports where Thierry Henry sort of reaches out and he touches Jamie Carragher's leg. Yeah. It reminds me of that, the way he sort of, you know, he says to Gareth, go get the guitar. As if, you know, because of this trauma, David is now going to soothe everyone who's at training. You know, he's gonna sing some songs and everyone will feel better. You know, it's just fantastic. But I tell you what I didn't notice. Again, a callback to the movie. Or call back to this scene that later, you know, we see something else. He's talking about, you know, a song called Equality Street. Yeah. It's just a throwaway line in the mid-credit scene. And it's like, oh, you know, we still saw that, you know, years later. I'm sure at that point he probably hadn't wrote it. But yeah, he sort of gave the line here.
Very clever. And they're all little, I know it sounds daft, but there is a universe where all this sits, Dave, isn't there? Which is clever. So yeah, really good, really interesting that. And also, I think going back on it, it's just perfect for me. It's absolutely perfect. There's nothing in this at all that, other than them two bits we said, but I don't think you get many shows where you get perfection. After 20 years, Dave, it's still so funny and just relevant as well to working in an office. And I think that is testament to him and Stephen Merchant.
Yeah. And we go back and we watch loads of movies, don't we, from down the years on the VHS Strikes Back, and we, you know, we go back to these movies that quite often we've loved at one point or another, and you go back and it's like, this really doesn't hold up at all. This is nowhere near what my memory says it was. This absolutely holds up, and there's nothing wasted at all. Even in the quieter moments, you know, when they're all getting ready for training, you've got Keith leaving his voicemail message and stuff. It all just, it fits perfectly because it sets the context for that mundane, boring training session. I couldn't think of anything that I would change in this episode at all. It's definitely been the best episode that we've gone back and watched.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Dave, we've done it every episode so far. So what is your best scene or best line of this episode?
That is a really tough question, isn't it? Because, you know, there's just so many. I mean, the iconic one, you know, I think there's been a rape up there. Probably has to be up there somewhere. Just because, again, like I said, with the first episode where, you know, he's talking about the guy, this is the guy who does the Ali G impressions. The guy, you know, says what he says, and then he's like, ooh, that's racist. You know, you just realise there that, oh fuck, nothing is off the table. You know, there is nothing that is safe that can't be joked about in this series. So, I mean, doing his whole Free Love on the Free Love Highway song and everyone kind of joining in and enjoying the fact that they're wasting this training day, you know, it's making it a bit more palatable than just sitting through this boring customer care course. I think, you know what, I'm going to go for that second one, I think. I think Free Love on the Free Love Highway, the whole sing through of that, Gareth doing the backing vocals, Tim eventually joining in as well, and then you just finish off and Rowan's had enough and he's like, right, that's lunch. I think that's the moment for me.
That's a good one, that, Dave. And I think for me, I said it earlier, you know, that whole fake role play thing with the hotel, and it isn't the bit when he says there's been a rape, but it is the line about what room are you in? 362, there's no such room in our hotel because some complaints are false. That for me is, and there's some amazing bits in this that have me out laughing out loud, but that bit every time gets me because it's just my sort of comedy. It's hilarious, Dave, and I do think that I am so excited. Well, I don't think, I know I'm so excited for the next couple of episodes because it's been dynamite, this, and this fourth episode has been sensational. It's definitely been my favourite, and I've absolutely loved going back on it, Dave. Really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely iconic episode, and as I mentioned a minute ago, you know, it absolutely lives up to how good you think it was, you know, and if anything, because there's so many things going on in the background, and not always the actors that are in the foreground, it's the things that are going on in the back as well, the subtle things. I think it's just so layered. You definitely pick up on extra bits, you know, and I never get bored of going back to this one. Now, Chris, we've had a few reviews, haven't we?
We have, Dave, yes. Over on Apple iTunes, we've had 3 reviews. So thank you guys for actually sending them in for us because, you know, we love the feedback, good, bad. We always will read them out and everything's been so positive. So long may it continue, Dave. So this one's from Eddie Roo. And that's a terrible thing, Dave. But anyway, here we go. Five out of five, Dave. Great listeners expected. And he's put, should we put good listen or great listen? Put great. Pod heavyweights, Chris and Dave, love. Is that heavyweights because of weight, Dave, or just because we do podcasts?
Probably a bit of both.
How dare you?
One right, from anyway. Column A, one from column B.
Yeah, lockdown definitely put pay to that one for us. But pod heavyweights, Chris and Dave, love of the office shines through, and this is chock full of their own Brent-like anecdotes. People laugh when they said we needed a third pod about the office. Those peeps show lots. Those peeps show lots are little slugs. Those peep show lot. Oh,
it's peep show in it, there.
Chris, come on. What are you doing? Yes, I know. Peep show. Yeah. Sorry about that, peep show guys. Sorry. Those peep show lots are little slugs. Little slugs with no personality. In fairness, Chris and Dave especially are a little bit older, so their take comes from a slightly different place, and it's a welcome addition to the Gervais pod landscape. Different pods for different needs. P.S. I enjoy all the Office pods and the Peep Show one too, so thank you very much, mate.
Awesome. I liked every bit of that message, apart from the, in fairness, Chris and Dave, and especially Dave.
A little bit older.
A little bit older. Yeah, thanks very much for that. So so this next one, Chris, is from, it's in the US store. It's from B. Aileen, and it's titled That Elusive Pod Chemistry. It's hard to say what makes a great podcast. These days, you can find a podcast for just about anything, with just about anyone. But the truly magic ones, the ones that crackle with humour and insight, so incredibly rare. Enter Chris and Dave, whose banter and chemistry has me grinning like a fool from the opening minute to the last. Somehow you feel like you're part of a lifelong friendship, trading barbs and quips with your own crew across the pond. Highly recommended for their whole group of podcasts, VHS Strikes Back, Chris and Dave's Reality Cast, and their guest stints on Comics in Motion. But this one, Back to the Office, may be their best yet. Ricky Gervais mastery plus Chris and Dave commentary, yes please. Add these guys to your feed, you won't be sorry. So there you go, Chris. Could be our best one yet.
That's excellent, that Dave. Thank you for that. That's humbling to say the least, Dave. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
It is fantastic.
It is, Noel. Thank you. Both of you are great. And we've got one more, Dave. It's a quick one. This one's from Macho Man 33. The stories from Chris and Dave whilst they watch each episode is comedy gold. Please do extras next. So, perfect, Dave.
Yeah, I know the other guys from the Office pods, I think Wern and Blog have done the extras. I think I've seen in their feed, though, they've done the extras next. And that is fucking brilliant. And again, just the outtakes that you see. One of my favourites is where you got Patrick Stewart. And basically, Ricky Gervais has written him these lines that he's this lecherous old man doing his own writing. He's like, you know, such things happens. And then all her clothes fall off.
Yeah,
you can see he keeps trying to do this. And Patrick Stewart is the consummate professional, you know, bloody Shakespearean actor. And then every time that Patrick Stewart is saying the lines that Ricky Gervais has basically written, Ricky Gervais just fucking cracks up. He's like, he can't do it. So, Yeah, extras is another one that's absolutely brilliant. But I think we've got a fair few to get through then before we get there, haven't we?
Definitely, definitely. And if you want to contact us, guys, on social media, at Back to the Off. And if you want to email us, backtotheofficepodcast@gmail.com. And as we've had today, if you want to drop us a review on the show, we really, really appreciate it. It really helps us get up them charts and that. So, Dave, episode 4 in the can. We are going to the penultimate episode next week of Series 1. In a couple of weeks, I do apologise. I cannot wait, my friend.
No, it's going to be brilliant, Chris. And all I've got to say to lead us out with is, how are you going to lead us out?
Well, Dave, there's only one thing to say. A good idea is a good idea forever. Bye now.
See you next time.
She's the serpent who guards the gates of hell. Pretty girl on the hood of a Cadillac, yeah. She's broken down on Freeway 9. Take a look, get her engine started. Leave a purring and a roll on by, bye bye. Free love on the free love freeway. The love is free and the freeway's long. I got some hot love on the hot love highway. Ain't going home cause my baby's gone.
She's dead.
She's not dead. Long time later, see a cowboy crying. Says, hey buddy, what can I do? He says, I lived a good life, about a thousand women. I said, well, why the tears? He says, because none of them was you.
What, you?
No, he's looking at a photograph.
Of you?
No, of his girlfriend. The video would have shown up.
Yeah, he sounds a bit gay at the moment.
It's not gay.
No.
Free love on the free love freeway. The love love is free and the freeway's long. I got some hot love on the hot love highway. Ain't going home cause my baby's gone, she's gone. Free love on the free love freeway. The love is free and the freeway's long. I got some hot love on the hot love highway. Ain't going home cause my baby's gone, she's gone, yeah. My baby's gone, she's gone, yeah.
Right, that's lunch.
Okay.